Thank you. I'm fairly fortunate to have found myself in this place. I remember a couple of years ago when Dr. Sharon Welch, provost and professor of ethics at Meadville Lombard Theological School, came to speak about the struggle for peace. We had had a few hours of kind of precious personal interaction, both about the public presentation she was going to make and the personal matters that we chose to share with each other. She wanted to know who her audience was, you understand. And she wanted to know how much of her personal story she could share. We talked about what it feels like sometimes to be in such a respectable and middle-class movement as Unitarian Universalism. How hard it can sometimes feel to be from an outsider background. She, because she grew up in humble surroundings and in the South and with a Southern accent, and I, because I grew up in a working-class family. We had each known poverty and periods of deprivation as children, and we each were pretty smart and pretty white and pretty lucky to have mentors who helped us reach for the stars and come at least to Unitarian Universalism. We sat on that settee right over there as our magnificent organ was played by the incomparable James Houston. And she smiled a big smile. My great aunt is so proud. My dad is so proud, I said in return, both of us speaking of people who had died. Who'd have thunk that Bobby Olson's kid would make it here to the big time? We held hands for a moment. And then I got up and said a few words of greeting to all of you who had come to a lecture, a proper middle-class lecture, led by a couple of imposters. I've been thinking about womanist ethics and the womanist ethic of community. Womanism being an African-American woman's perspective on being in the world that's different from a white feminism, asks slightly different questions because of a different social location. A womanist ethic of community insists that people need to be known in their entirety. It can't just be the division between men and women, but it has to be the particularities of men and women in an entire community. All people need to be dealt with ethically, a womanist would say, and so black people must be dealt with ethically. All women should be dealt with ethically, and so all black women must be dealt with ethically in their womanness and their blackness. All systems should be about the uplift of the people, and so all systems must be about the uplift of black people, of working class people, of all oppressed people. This womanist ethical stance, as articulated by Howard University professor Cheryl J. Sanders, demands that we see liberation as the reason for religion. Life contains for all of us all kinds of barriers and all kinds of bonds. And life is about growing to be set free from bonds, growing to overcome barriers, working to find one's true self for the sake of the whole of the person and the sake of the whole of the community and the sake of the whole of the species and the world, and maybe in this house, the universe. In more traditional language, life is about learning of and conforming one's life to to the plan that God has for each of us and all of us. This finding one's true self is the ethical demand of life itself. Our Unitarian Universalist faith says that we affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. But while the worth and dignity may in here, may be within us from the very beginning of what it means to be a human, we have to be about learning and growing and developing and becoming the people that we are. The inherent worth and dignity is not just something that is. It's something that we practice and learn and become more facile with as we grow into our humanity. We discover our worth and dignity because it becomes more and more true as we live our precious lives. And coming to church is about growing into that soul. The ethical value that Reverend Sanders brings to this work is the value of remoralization. While we might talk about the inherent worth and dignity of people as a moral truth, this truth is not easily expressed, especially among people living under oppression. The equipping of people with moral values must be a re-moralization because the system in which we live overvalues some people's inherent worth and dignity because of financial resource, sometimes because of gender, because of ethnicity and perceived race, and the system devalues others. And so our morals are stripped of us by the conditions under which we live, and the work that we as a church need to be doing is the re-moralization of all of us. Now, there's some people who talk about this society that we live in as a tale of two kings. Two kings. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King made an assertion, "I have a dream." This king, who was raised in a church-going middle-class home, "I have a dream." And then there was this other king, this Rodney King, who asked, "Can't we just get along?" This king inhabited a world that had been largely abandoned of dreams, where he participated in some perhaps immoral activities. Certainly some illegal activities, like using drugs and distributing drugs. And he also was subjected to some of the harshest things that the society could deliver, in him being beaten by the police, and then by the judicial system affirming the right of those police to beat him. So a womanist ethic seeks the wholeness of the whole that can contain both of these kings. Ready to challenge Martin for his unwillingness, for example, to allow women into real places of authority in his movement. Ready to ask his church why it couldn't find a way to hold this king for his own fullness. Sanders writes these words, "Remoralization is offered here as a new name for the process by which African American men and women can provide empowering responses to Rodney King's question, in keeping with the moral vision of Martin King. It is derived from the term demoralization, which was coined by the great 19th century lexicographer Noah Webster. In Webster's dictionary, demoralize has three meanings. To corrupt the morals of, example, the drug habit demoralizes its victims. To weaken the spirit, courage, discipline, or staying power of, as hunger and cold demoralized the army. To confuse or disorder mentality, as the examiner's questions demoralized the applicant. To re-moralize, then, means to restore to a morally sound condition. Example, the prayer habit re-moralizes those who embrace it. To strengthen the spirit, courage, discipline, and staying power of. Example, love and acceptance re-moralize the men in the single father's support group. To enable creative problem solving through restoration of mental clarity and order, the adult mentor's close supervision remoralized the adolescent. An essential motif undergirding the definition of remoralization is the interrelatedness of personal and social transformation. In our society, we have established institutions that offer a kind of forgiveness to people who have transgressed social laws. We call these dispensers of forgiveness prisons. How the promise of prisons offered by Quakers centuries ago has long been abandoned in the practice of incarceration will be a topic for another day. But the question of the practice of religion being an essential locus for the experience of forgiveness by the offender remains for us. Last Thursday, absent the snowstorm that stopped us in our tracks for a couple of days, you would have heard the testimony of ex-felons union members, men brought together at the Rose Street Community Center in East Baltimore. They call themselves the X-Men. These men come together to consider the question of the reintroduction of people every day into the communities that surround us after inhabiting the world that we know as jail. This work of remoralization is an uphill battle, which many of us have been reading about in our study of the New Jim Crow. But the hope expressed by these men expresses a communal commitment to remoralization by men that I believe is coherent with the womanism of Dr. Sheryl Sanders. She talks about this really as being a religious project. And in considering it, it's not just a Christian religious project. She looks at Alhaj Malik El-Shabazz, Malcolm X. Malcolm, who came to a place that said the work that he had to do was not just about the social work, but it was about his own soul. It was about his own understanding, about his capacity to forgive himself for who he may have been at certain times, and through discipline and asceticism and a reintegration of his profound intellect to somehow get to a place that he was re-moralized, and a community surrounded him for such re-moralization. Just as a final word for this morning's message, and perhaps as a meditation for us all, I want to share with you a brief video. It's about a program at the Rhode Island Adult Correctional Systems. Again, a religious program, not Unitarian Universalist, not Black Muslim, another program. And I think the words of the participants speak for themselves. Let them speak to us.